setting up shop.
Hi everyone, welcome back to another episode of Setting Up Shop. I'm Dan, a woodworker, a wood turner specifically from the UK, and with me is my co-host Rasmus, a blacksmith from Norway. No Heidi this episode though, unfortunately. She's got things going on in her life which have prevented her from joining us, but we look forward to her company again, hopefully next episode. But we have got someone else with us. It's our second ever guest, and this is the lovely Jess Jones. Hi, Jess.
Hello.
So, Jess, I'm very fortunate that I actually, in my day job, work with Jess in a slightly different department. Mm-hmm. But she was also recently featured on a UK-based TV show called Make It to Market. And so just a brief summary for those of you who may not have seen the show, it is specifically aimed almost like the highly budgeted and TV version of kind of what we're doing on the podcast, where they are take applicants who are currently sort of side hustle or hobbyist makers. Maybe they've just got started in it as a business, and try and help them grow their business, give them a few ideas and inspiration and challenges to make them push themselves out of their comfort zone a little bit as well. Would you say that's a fair summary, Jess?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, that's all right then. I've got that well to start with. So Jess was on the most recent season, which is still available to watch on Catch Up if you're in the UK. Jess, can you remind us which episode you are in, please?
I am episode 12 of series 3.
Series 3, episode 12. Watch all of them. It's a nice, easygoing format. I would say that there's no jeopardy like you might see in some of the American sort of more reality-based TV shows. It's quite straightforward, and each episode features two different makers and is approximately 45 minutes long without adverts kind of thing. So it's just, yeah, simple to watch and very pleasant and very wholesome. Kind of like, I suppose you could almost say like a gateway drug into some of the kind of bake-off and that kind of stuff, which tend to be a little bit more full of jeopardy and frantic, but yeah, still awesome. So yeah, okay, excellent. First of all, Jess, we wanted to just have a brief discussion about some of the things that you did on there. I've watched your episode, and so has Rasmus, and we're going to try and ask questions that aren't too episode specific for our listeners who won't have seen it, because obviously that could make things a little bit too inside baseball, as the Americans might say. So just a pre-question then, really. In the episode, when you meet the host, he issues what he calls his challenges on there. And I thought this was quite interesting, because I think the challenges, certainly for your episode, were the same for both people. Do you happen to know if that is the same across the series? This is where it becomes blindingly obvious. I've only watched your episode.
That's fine. No, mine was a mentor's challenge, which I did get told about in advance because it needed planning and work to sort of do before reaching the stage of going to filming. Other people's, it was perhaps learning a new technique or being taught a skill that would benefit them. And in others, it was to work on a specific project, which is what I had.
Okay, that's interesting. I didn't realise they were quite as diverse as that, but it makes sense because depending on where people are and their skill level and things like that. So you mentioned then that you were kind of given advance warning of that. How much time did you actually have between them? Well, let's roll it back a bit. I'm jumping ahead, really. When you initially applied...
Yes.
That's what we should really talk about. We should really go right back, because you applied for the show. Then there's obviously the waiting time period and there's the kind of assessment, whatever. How stressful, that's probably the best question. You know, what sort of time period are we talking between you applying and it becoming clear that you're being invited on the show and that whole process? Like, what sort of scale are we talking about?
I think it was about this time last year that I applied for the first sort of stage, which was the online application forms.
Yeah.
And then there was a phone call, sort of like a phone call interview, probably about a month later. And then there was also a video interview, which we did. Okay. And then it was beginning of July for the first stage of filming for the show.
Okay. And were those interviews with production staff or were they with the host?
Production staff. They put you at ease and they just chatted just about the whole process, which was great.
That's good. So they gave you lots of warning about what exactly was going to happen and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and what to sort of expect from it, really, and then what support you'd have along the way.
Okay, good. It's always good to hear from a TV show of this kind of thing that you're given clear direction beforehand, and that it's not going to surprise you. Okay, so and then once you knew you were going to be on, how much time were you given? You know, when they issued the challenges, yeah. as it were, sort of how much time did you have to kind of conceive of your idea and do whatever it is you required for that?
Well, in the initial sort of like online paperwork with the application form, you were asked about what you would likely to be bringing along for like your volume piece and different things. So you had a bit of an idea of what you might create. The Mentors Challenge is something new for this series that they haven't done before.
Okay.
Probably 3 to 4 weeks from being told what the Mentors Challenge was going to be to then going and taking it along for the filming.
Right. Okay. Which sounds like a lot of time if you're not working full time and have children.
Yeah. yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting. Just to clarify for a few people then who haven't watched the show, so there's a Mentors Challenge, which, as you say, is new for the season. There's also a Volume Challenge. Could you just clarify what that means?
Yeah, so the Volume Challenge is something that is one of your like staple pieces that you make it already that you can produce in high volumes, and that was something that I took along with one of my cushions with a design that I really like that sort of had sort of personal meaning as well. So you had that, the Mentors Challenge, and then you had your favourite piece as well.
Okay.
So you had three things to sort of produce and take along with you and make on the day.
Okay, and it's just a day filming, is it, for that initial part?
It was meant to be, I'm trying to think, it was meant to be 2 days, but mine ended up being 3 days because we had really, really bad weather.
Okay.
You did mention in the episode and you saw the downpour and you moved into the barn or something.
That's right. Yeah, it was awful weather, and everyone was like running around trying to protect the cameras from all the rain.
Oh yeah.
The sound engineers couldn't really sort of do their end of the job because it was just too much background noise with all the heavy downpour. Gazebos took off as well. It was epic.
Yeah, quite dramatic, but they don't show that bit. Yeah. You're there trying to protect your cushions and your sewing machine, and they're all running around with the camera equipment. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it was 3 days instead of the two for the initial sort of round of filming.
Okay.
Which were three long days as well.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay. So as part of the format for the show, again, explaining for the listener and viewer. So you initially go there for your, let's call it the 2 days, however, you know, but quite long days because you're filming and redoing bits. And then you're making a project on the day. And in the episode, they only show snippets of you making that project. But obviously that project was about 4 hours, I think they said it took you to do. So I'd imagine, are you pretty much to the talking about every part of the process you're doing for that period of time? Or were they, because you don't know what they're going to use, do you?
No, well, I had sort of a ready-made piece as well, just in case we didn't get it finished on the day, which they do, which is good because they do advise you, like, bring along your volume piece already made in case you don't get to do the whole filming and create and finish it from sort of start to finish on the day, which was luckily I did because of the rain. I didn't get to on the day.
Yeah.
So bits of filming you saw with me making, that was just different stages of a piece that actually didn't get finished, but I had the backup.
They ask you to bring a Blue Peter piece, which is
entirely was helpful in the end.
Absolutely. Okay. That's really interesting. So you've got, you're aware of challenges beforehand, you're given time to prepare. It doesn't, not that it necessarily makes it less anxious or nerve-wracking, but they give you as much preparation sort of as they can. And so then the time period between that first stage of filming and then the next stage, obviously in the episode, it's been 8 weeks, I think they talk about. Is it actually 8 weeks or is it deviate a little bit, or it's really strict?
No, 8 weeks. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's good to know as well. That's quite interesting. Okay. Well, that's cool. So would you, and I'm going to ask that question at the end, actually. Have you got any questions you want to jump in with, Rasmus? Because I've got quite a few here and I could just keep talking. This is normally where I know you can keep talking.
It's sort of just on the style of program, I guess. Do you get a good chance to interact with any of the other participants for the season, or are you sort of segmented off?
No, you do. You're filmed in different groups. I think there's three groups of, I'm trying to think how many. Yeah, there was three groups. So you had separate days. So we had the Saturday, Sunday filming, and then the next lot were coming in Monday, Tuesday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday. So it's overlapped a little bit, but I probably had about 10 other participants that I got to meet on the day. And there is quite a lot of waiting around, especially if you've got the bad weather we had. So really nice. You got to sort of sit down, chill out. There was like tea and coffee, snacks, things to sort of chat about. And a lot of the mentors would get involved and sit around and have a chat as well. So that, like the leather worker, there was a stained glass artist with the mentors that were really nice and just helped you sort of feel confident, because they'd give you little pep talks and share their experiences as well.
I mean, that sounds almost like it's could be more beneficial to you than the TV program itself and the structure around that. It's sort of this hidden world where you actually get all of the knowledge that I think you said you did you like 1,300 in revenue or something for the market thing they talked about?
Yes.
So that's another question. Like, how much of a time frame is that depicting, so to speak?
That is in the 8 weeks from when you do filming for the first round to when you go back. So that, for me, a lot of the time was developing things. So developing the slow stitching kits and the bags. I think I did 2 markets in that time. Other people were doing more regular markets or larger markets. So they had sort of more opportunity to create the sales. My mentor was quite focused more about building a sort of starting block that would last longer, that would see you further, rather than concentrating about profit in that 8 weeks. He wanted to sort of establish a bit more of a base to sort of continue onwards, which was good. That's what I preferred.
Sounds like really good advice. Yeah. But that's a bit of context that I think was skipped out of the episode, because like we only hear like the in this period amount of money, and there's no further context for it. There's no saying like, oh, I did this number of markets. I don't think anyone even mentioned I did this number of markets.
They don't mention how many markets. It does lead me to ask the question, are you given rules as to how you can generate that revenue with your business? Are you told it has to be sold at a market, or are you, does it, do they not?
No, it doesn't have to be at a market, but you do have to fill in a sales log with some references so they can verify those are actual sales.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Everything, so it's not all just you're not making it up, or it's not just your mum's bought everything. That's fair enough.
So I actually did a workshop within those 8 weeks, but because it was inquired about before the 8 weeks, I couldn't include that in my sales.
Okay.
I was a bit gutted because it would have been a higher profit in that time, but I had some stuff deducted because it was before the 8 weeks started.
Okay. So they do try and be fair with it then. It's, you know, and I think this is the overall feeling that I did like about the show, is that it's, as I said at the beginning, it's, they're not trying to put jeopardy in there. They are just trying to show the average person trying to make a go of it with their craft and just try and give them a boost.
Yeah.
But also, I like the fact that it highlights different crafts. So, because theoretically, if someone was to ask you, what do you do? And you could justifiably say, oh, well, I sew. Which is this really broad topic of what it is. But I would argue that you're quite specific. You know, the fact that you're reusing old fabrics so that they don't go to landfill, the fact that you're creating your own designs, the fact that you're making cushions, but they're not just, oh, it's a cushion, it's two pieces of fabric just sewed together. It's, you know, that there's, and you'll have to forgive me for getting terminology wrong. Is it appliqué on those, or is it a different style of?
It's, you could kind of say fabric collage or appliqué.
So I got the terminology right. I'd just like to point out to my wife, who will probably listen to this episode at some point, that I did get the sewing terminology right. Excellent. Yeah, so because there's quite, what I was getting at is there's quite distinct crafts being shown and therefore being pushed into the public eye, which can only help, you know, help people move forward with kind of the idea of, oh, that looks interesting, or I could do that, or that kind of thing, and keep crafts alive and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. That's really interesting. You hinted at it a little bit before, but did it change the way that you look at your business?
It did, definitely, because I think, like I said in my episode, I didn't want to spend too much time being a busy fool concentrating on things that don't sell. So it made me think much more of a business head. Piash, my mentor, did keep saying to me, you can't just make things that you like all the time. You have to think, will other people like it? Will it sell? Will it be profitable? So that definitely helped. And having a time scale and a deadline is quite often what I need to get things done. So I've been thinking about different things for a while, like the slow stitching kits, but having that deadline made me think I have to do it now.
I think it's definitely one of the hardest things for us who create to recognize the fact that just because we like something doesn't mean people will buy it.
Yeah.
And that actually, if you want to do this as a business, you need to make what people like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But also in your own individual style, so you still set yourself apart, which can be, that can be different. So do you see yourself, obviously you've got your slow stitch kits, you've got your potentially your tote bags and your cushions. Are all three of those things you're going to carry on with?
I think so. Yeah, they're all selling really well. I've also started doing fabric collage patterns that can be downloaded online, pieced together, or I've got them printed in large pattern scale so I can send them in the post as well. So that's another sort of project that I've had on the go for a while, which is now on my website as well. But yeah, I think I'm going to continue with them all. And then with the slow stitching kits, that's something that I want to add to and create like different ranges as well.
Yeah.
So another option I was thinking was like insects and butterflies, things like that, and just a different range that makes them more collectible and you kind of get different people's interests in as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That certainly makes sense. Certainly makes sense. Have you have you been given any help, and how have you considered marketing this range of products other than on your own social media? Has there been any advice on that?
There has been through the WhatsApp group, so where we talked about meeting the other makers, and like that's been really, really beneficial because that's continued long after the show's finished filming. Nice. So there's loads of people on there that have got different experiences. There was one lady, Shiv, who shared her knowledge of writing press releases.
Oh, excellent.
So I learned how to do that, sent them out, and that's when I got in the Somerset Life magazine as well. So that has been really, really beneficial, having that shared knowledge between, I think, the 30 of us in the group, and everyone's got something different that they contribute, and everyone's happy to share as well. So, yeah, I think it's just, it's been great for that as well.
I think networking is, and it's a horrible word, really, but I think it is possibly the most powerful tool that we have as creative people, because finding that group of people whose brains work in a very similar way and are all trying to achieve a similar goal, but aren't in competition.
I was going to say, there's no competition. It's all everyone supporting everyone else and sharing knowledge.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. So would you repeat the experience?
I initially thought no, because there was a lot of tears shed throughout the whole process, but I wouldn't be where I am with things now if I hadn't have done that. So yes, probably I would have still done it, I think, now looking back.
I think that's quite telling, because having known you from a semi-personal perspective through work, even though we don't interact a huge amount, we still interacted, I've definitely seen a shift in confidence from before the show to after the show. That's part of the reason why I asked the question, because I was interested to hear whether or not this was a plateau, or if this is now kind of the inspiration to go, oh no, actually, here are things I can now achieve. You know, I know I need to do this to set this goal and move forward and all of that kind of stuff. So it's good to hear that you have identified in yourself that, as opposed to it just being something that I can witness from the outside and others have done as well, I'm sure. That's really cool. That's an interesting point, the fact that you gave it time to gave it time to reflect.
Yeah, it's definitely been emotional, definitely. I think I drove home in floods of tears after the first lot of filming. I think it was so intense being out of your comfort zone around people you don't know, having the cameras on you and watching you do something that you normally do on your own in private. Like, disturbing. It's quite a personal space, my studio. I've got my coffee, podcast, and I just am in my own little world. So having someone watch you was really quite hard to start with. But yeah, it's weird. It was emotional, definitely. And I learned a lot about sort of standing up for myself, and perhaps some things that I got asked to do challenge-wise, like with the baby blanket, for example, that's not really been a direction I ever wanted to go in. So it was actually a good opportunity for me to learn to sort of say, actually, no, which is very hard to do sometimes.
Yeah. The baby blanket was one that when I saw you do it and I saw it finished, it was a fantastic piece.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely got the feeling, for me personally, I got the feeling that you were like, this isn't what I want to do.
No.
When he asked you to price it and you came out with the price, I was like, you know, that's too low. That's the price to shift that on so you don't have to make another one.
My daughter's got it now. I was like, here, you can have it. That was one aspect I wasn't, I mean, like I said, we got told in advance that was going to be my challenge piece, and I was a bit like, I'm not sure, that's not the direction I want to go in, but they're the mentor, they're the expert, we'll see where this goes. That's why I continued and I did make it. But then looking more into it and the background, the rules and regulations with baby items, especially if it's a quilt for sleeping in. I was just like, no, that's just far too much of a minefield to go into. And I can't use vintage and recycled fabrics because that's not something a lot of people would want to use on a baby's skin. You can't guarantee sort of the contents or where it's been previously, even though I washed them. But yeah, it's all these little things that just reinforce the idea. I was just like, no, that's not me. So that was something that I had to learn to do. And that was very hard because they did want to pursue it. But I was just like, no, it's just not. It's just where I want to go. And that's something that since then I've also been able to say no to other things that I'm not comfortable with, which is good. So that's a lesson learned.
And I think this is part of what all of us hopefully realize over time, and we've mentioned a few times in previous episodes, that just because something is a failure, or you know, you're not resonating with the piece, doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. It just means you identify the fact that it's, you know, it's not for you, or it's a learning experience in whatever way that may be. So it's definitely sounds like, even though some of the experiences there may have felt at the time stressful or anxious, it certainly feels like it's come out as a positive, net positive across the board. And I look forward to hearing the feedback from the 30 people in the group who are going to listen to this episode and clearly start listening to the podcast and increase our viewership by a third of what it currently is. What's next on your question list, Raz? As we've said already once today, I'm going to be talking a lot. I've got more to ask.
I'm kind of curious about, you just mentioned sort of the whole being able to say no to projects and also finding really good reasons why this is not a fit for you. But has there been like a really good moment of sort of eye-opening during this TV show experience? Like something that really sort of shifted how you view either yourself in the craft or your business or something like that?
I think just in general, creating like the press releases and realizing that I really had, I suppose, just been shutting myself away and in my own little world thinking, oh, no one's buying anything, I'm not doing very well. Whereas I hadn't actually been putting myself out there at all. Yeah. So that's something that's been quite eye-opening. And I think just the feedback from when people have watched the show that have got in touch and said how perhaps they've struggled with anxiety, how they've got into crafting, how that's helped them. And just the really nice messages of like encouragement and how much they love the work. That's really eye-opening because I'm thinking, well, to me, it's just something I do. Whereas other people have said like, well, how do you do it? Like, how do you do this? How do you do that? They've been asking questions that I think, well, just do it. But actually, I realise that there is something perhaps to share with other people. So that's another one of my goals, is to work towards workshops. But again, it's the confidence to do that and actually how to format it so that people don't think, oh, that was a bit rubbish after I've done one and sort of flailed through it. But yeah, that's probably been eye-opening, is having the feedback afterwards. It's been really good.
I think workshops would be good for you, and if you're able to go down that route, I would recommend that you run the first one free for not friends or family, but sort of maybe friends of friends who are interested, and then at the end of it give them a printed out feedback form or a link to a feedback form they can send to you that's anonymous. Because that way they've got no skin in the game. They've not paid for it. Yeah. So there's no reason for them to go, well, that wasn't what I expected. All they're giving is time. And they know in advance that this is a trial run. So if things are a little bit clunky, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But ask them to give you both positive and negative feedback in the form. And that would, if you take it at face value and you make sure that you don't take anything personally in feedback, that would probably help you with getting the structure right, but also with, you know, just understanding what people do and don't want. Because having run courses in the past, I did one in the past in a previous life where all the feedback from all 10 attendees was that the room was too cold. There was nothing written on there at all about the course, the tutor, the content or anything. It was always that the room was too cold for every member on there. And so it's little things like that that will just make that slight difference. And you suddenly go, okay, so people didn't like my course because of the temperature of the room. They don't, the content is almost become secondary. So you have to kind of think of things like that. You know, what's the temperature of the room like? How close are the toilets? Is there tea and coffee facilities?
Yes.
Get those out of the way. And then people will then start actually paying attention to giving you feedback about whether your, what you taught was any good and that kind of thing.
Yeah, someone did say to me, just make sure there's cake there and people will be happy. So,
yeah, that's a good one.
I mean, was that Lisa by any chance?
It wasn't, no.
Oh, okay. That's all right. Just make a complete guess that it might have been one of our other colleagues. It sounded like the sort of thing she would say. And she's not wrong, whoever did say it. I'm going to change the last question I asked you and put it slightly different. I've asked, did it change the way you look at your business? And then trying to drill down that a little bit. How do you think it benefited you the most?
I think personal confidence has definitely been the most beneficial and giving me the motivation and momentum to keep going. Like, I've tried to continue it after as well, which has been good. Like, so I've been booking in for different events, planning ahead. So confidence and motivation, I think, and giving me sort of a bit of a kick in the direction.
Yeah, we all need that every now and then.
Often, it feels like for me.
Are you or for me?
Maybe both. I have a question though. Where are you hoping to end up with your business? Sort of, is this going to be your full-time job, main money income for you plus minus your family kind of, or is it sort of always going to be some sort of side hustle?
I would love it to be my main source of income, definitely. Mm. But I think because it's quite lonely being in a studio all the time, I think I would still continue working part-time for that social interaction. And keeping on top of what's actually happening in different things. Working in the craft shop's ideal because you get to learn different things, what people are liking, what people aren't liking. So that's good. And I would like to do workshops, kind of just, I suppose, creating that balance between sewing and making and sharing and doing workshops, I think would be the way I want to go.
Mm.
But it'd be my main source so that I'm not reliant on other people, really. The people that would be ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I like the fact that you're mentioning specifically there having the social contact as well. And it's not just about you interacting with people for keeping yourself sane, but it's also, like you said, learning new skills and being aware of what current trends are and things like that. Because you can't rely on social media, which covers the whole world as to what trends are, from it being the same as being localized to Somerset in the UK.
Yeah, that's true. And Instagram isn't always real, is it? Like, people portray what they want to portray, and that's probably a whole new topic to talk about, isn't it? Being sucked down that rabbit hole of what,
comparing yourself to the fake facsimile of what is real on social media,
which is all too easy to do, isn't it? Like, keep reminding myself, just do what I do, don't put what other people are doing, just do what I do and stick in your lane.
Have you considered, and are you on the route to offering your slow stitch kits to shops?
I have had it in a couple of shops. It's just trying to work out the margin, really.
So
that's something that the mentor helped me look into. But it's just finding the right places, really, as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, since the show's aired, I've had emails asking me to stock different shops. But at the moment, I just need to concentrate on making what I need to make. But once that's done and I've fulfilled the orders that I've got, definitely going to look into that, because that would be good.
What is the next milestone you're working towards now? Is it getting the stitch kits to shops, or do you have sort of a goal before that?
There's a few. There's the slow stitching kits back in sort of the shops. The downloadable patterns definitely is something that I want to sort of tap into and create, because that makes it more accessible to more people. And that's different from slow stitching kits, because that would be machine sewing. So at the moment, I've got a few patterns on there that are printable on UK size paper, but I'm now converting it so it's letter sized. So that
it'll... Esky Americans.
Yeah, but I've only just got a computer this year, so it's all been learning and working
through
that myself. Because again, I suppose I'm quite stubborn that I kind of begrudge getting other people to do stuff if I can learn to do it and do it myself.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of have that control.
I know exactly what you mean.
I do second that greatly. And it is, I think, really important to understand that part of your process and of the items you sell at the same time, that's probably a big bottleneck in time for you. And finding someone that is better and faster and quicker, that can just, you pay them and they take care of that, and then you stick to sort of where you actually make big money.
Yeah. I had a similar thing with creating the instruction booklet for the slow stitching kits. I spent, I don't know how many days, swearing, getting really frustrated with the printer because I was trying to get it double-sided so that I could just then put the sheets together, staple it and go. And in the end, I was just like, no, this is costing me too much time as it is. There's other things I want to do. So in the end, I've ended up sending the PDF file and getting it printed, which is so much easier. I could have saved myself those couple of days of stress and paper being wasted by doing that in the first place. So it's just learning when, no, actually, I'm no good at this. Someone else can do this, but I'll try and do it myself first.
And I think that's good. I think it is really important to actually be hands-on with as many parts of the process as possible, because then you sort of, you know, the value someone else is doing for you. It's not just handing it over and complaining about the bill. You sort of, you know, also how much time it is actually saving you, and or then how much money you're making by having someone else do it for you.
Yeah.
Plus, of course, the whole thing of, oh, but now I also understand the language. If I build up a good relationship, maybe they have tips and I can actually understand exactly why that's a good idea, because I know where the savings are.
Definitely.
So if you were going to be, I'm sure you have already been potentially asked this question, but if you were going to offer any advice to people who are going to want to apply on this show in the future, what little pearls of wisdom would you suggest? Or we'll ask that question first and I've got a slightly less serious question after that.
I would just say, just kind of follow your passion, stick to what you like, and you just have to think at the end of the day, once this process has been finished, it's your business. So try and steer things the way that you want them. Like, you're going to, if you want to be doing this long term, you've got to like what you do.
Yeah.
So kind of just stick to your gut feeling.
Yeah. You don't want to end up with making something on the show that the audience really loves, but you hate making and is not very suitable to yourself at all.
Yeah.
But that's all anyone ever asks for. So the slightly less serious question, what would be the recommended snack that you would suggest people go for or take with them on this sort of experience?
To be honest, I couldn't eat anything. I felt so nervous. But they did have chamomile tea there, so I was drinking lots of that.
Okay.
And rescue remedy. I was so nervous. I just couldn't eat. I just couldn't. It was, I suppose, they did have lots there. There was like so many different chocolate things, sandwiches, crisps, different drinks. But for me, it was chamomile tea.
Oh, I'd probably be the opposite. I'd just be eating everything out of nervousness. I'd be just like, no, we're not. Just keep going.
Was there a big sort of surprise moment of looking behind the camera on how a TV show is made for you?
I don't think so. It was all just such a new experience. I suppose it was such a surprise how kind of low key everything was, and how, I don't know if it was just that particular production crew and Dom, the presenter, everyone was just really relaxed, supportive, and give you the time. So I suppose that was kind of a bit of an eye-opener. I wasn't expecting it to be so relaxed. And just, and the cameraman as well, because a lot of it, you're sort of kind of away from the set as such. You're in the gardens, in the setting, and you're being talked to by the cameraman, who was called Ian. And that was kind of nice because you were talking to a person, not a camera.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have you not looking at the camera, talking to them and just having a conversation.
Yeah.
So that was an eye-opener, just how human everything is.
Yeah.
It sounds like they have a really, really good crew for this, that they have really figured out sort of the ethos for why this show should exist. And they just dialed like all the people in and the atmosphere into making that work and make all of you as participants relax and feel at home as much as possible.
Definitely. Yeah. And through that 8-week process as well, you'd have weekly check-ins with the production team and your mentor, and just how kind of casual that was. Like, a lot of them, we sort of follow each other on Instagram now, and you interact still. It's not sort of cut and bye, that's it.
Okay.
It continues, so it's nice.
That's good. Yeah. I've done a little bit of TV work before, and like always it feels like, no, it's the episode that's the focus. We just need to get the job done and then we're out of here. and it's, you feel sort of almost dehumanized as a part of that.
Yes, but then that is you being an extra, which is always part and parcel of it.
No, but I mean, not even that, but it's just the whole thing of, well, yeah, also, I have never been the focus of attention in any of those. So by all means, that's a fair point. At the same time, you sort of see how the crew works and how they look and how they talk and how they behave. Like, often I feel like there is just a focus on, we have a job to do and it's not people.
Yeah. Like there's the agenda there and the job to be done.
Yeah, kind of that. But this sounds so much more lovely, really.
It is like a little
British
family.
Television. Sorry, Jess. Yeah, it's like a little family.
It is, yeah. And it's been really great. And just to have that support afterwards from the other participants, been good.
So you've mentioned it a couple of times, but we haven't really drawn a focus on it. So you were featured in a... I won't call it, it's a regional magazine is probably the best way of putting it rather than local, because it does cover the entire county of Somerset. And it is part of an entire series throughout the UK, but it is widely distributed throughout shops. So did you, after you had this conversation with one of the others about writing things, did you approach them and say, hey, this is who I am and what I've done and I've just done the TV show type thing? Or was it, yeah?
It was, yeah. I'd sent out lots and lots of press releases because that's what this other lady, Shiv's advised. Like, you need to just put yourself out there, share your story and just kind of contact as many people as possible. So that's what I did. But what I did with Somerset Life is I've kind of tailored each press release to who I was sending it to.
Okay.
And that's a magazine that I've kind of read before, so I kind of know what they're about. And I sent it and straight away they were back to me like, yes, we're so excited, we'd love it. So that was really good.
Excellent. So the follow-up question to that, because I know people have had similar things, did you then have to pay for that space?
No.
Excellent. That's really good. Because the reason why I ask that question is I do know that other similar magazines have run features throughout the year and they potentially have reached out to people.
Mm-hmm.
In effect, you're saying, hey, look, you can have your photo and your name and your description or whatever in the magazine, but it will cost X amount, which I have to say, I have no problem with people doing that at all. Like, you know, it's basically advertising but written in a different way and that kind of thing. And I didn't think that's what happened with yourself, but I just wanted to make it clear for people that this isn't something you've paid to be in. You've reached out and they've said yes and then printed it, which is exactly the kind of thing that you want the celebration with that. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think because it's kind of all just celebrating what we've got here in Somerset and sharing what's available here and kind of the Somerset spirit, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking out at the sun over an apple tree as we speak. It needs massive pruning and it's not my tree, but it's still looking at the sun over an apple tree. It's a lovely springtime here at the moment, so it's perfect time to be in Somerset. Or particularly as a... sorry, getting distracted by the field outside my window there. We had a heron land in it earlier when I was just getting ready to come and record, which was lovely, but quite bizarre. I didn't manage to get a photo of it, unfortunately. Need to upgrade my camera. Sorry?
Have you got a pond in your garden?
Nope. No, the farmer was just turning over all of the soil in the fields and all of the gulls have come down, and then a heron did as well for some reason. So he was just strolling around. And anyway, deviation number 5 today, I think, something like that.
That still means you have 2 to go.
Only 2. All right. I'll have to be careful how I use them. Well, Jess, it's been lovely to chat to you about your experience and to find out a little bit more from some of the behind the scenes stuff and all of that kind of thing, because totally understandable. It's only a snapshot of the amount of time. Like you said, you were there for 3 days and out of a 45-minute program, you were only 50% of that. And then, you know, that includes your return for the other day of filming and whatever. So it's quite a lot, I'm sure, that hit the cutting room floor, as they would say, even though it's digital now. I've got to ask, I've been thinking about this. Did you at any point screw something up and then just swear loudly so that they couldn't use the footage?
No, there was lots. There was lots of like blah 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 blah, like starting again. Like a lot of it. It was maybe not so much when you're on the station, like the textile station where you're sewing, but when you're away and you're doing this sort of more like one-on-one chat with the cameraman, there was a lot of that. That was, can you say that again? Can you say that again? Especially, we had not only the rain, but we had mic problems as well, separate from the rain. So a lot of it didn't get picked up. So we had to repeat it. And then you had to think, oh, how did I say that again? Like, especially if you'd got into the sort of swing of things with talking and you kind of said exactly what you wanted to say. And then you have to repeat it. And you think, oh, no, I didn't quite say that the same.
I can never do that. Mm. I've been asked to do that. And so I'll just say something off cuff. And then, well, that was really good. Now, can you repeat that again? I'm like, no.
What did I say?
I don't even remember half the words I've just said out of my mouth. Why would I be able to repeat that? And then it becomes this sort of like dumbed down version that just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Marvellous. Right. So going forward then, first of all, where can people find you? Where's the best place for them to come and find you just to follow, but also for buying your lovely things?
I would be on either Instagram or Facebook, just as Dandelion and Peacock, or my website, which is thedandelionandpeacock.co.uk.
Okay, so that is dandelion as in the flower, and then and, no ampersand, mm-hmm. and then peacock as in the bird. Yep.
Excellent. We will have the things in the Notion.
We will, of course, have the things in the show notes underneath. But, you know, just for people who, like me, get lazy and just close the app down and don't bother looking, we will keep putting the words out there so that they're in people's brains. Dandelion and Peacock.
And then I have actually braved it and booked in for, I don't know if you've heard of Craft the Crafters at Shepton Mallet. Ooh. They do Shepton Mallet and Exeter. And I've braved it and I've booked myself a pitch there for end of November.
Okay, so is this going to be Dandelion and Peacock as seen on Make It at Market? Lovely. Have you sort of mentioned to that fact to them and told them that they should push you to a premium spot for the same lower price? Or...
No, I haven't.
Because let's be honest, the shine from the show only lasts so long, so you've got to milk it for as much as you can until you go forward. Okay, I'm just embarrassing you now, and just to say no, I haven't done that. Okay. Well, Jess, fantastic. Thank you very much for being our guest. I hope lots of people start to follow you as a result of this. And this is always a reciprocal thing. So hopefully we've had a load of new listeners because they like you and they know you and you've spoken about being on here, and they'll come and listen to us and then listen to me waffle on and my two co-hosts here on other episodes, which would be marvellous. It would be great. It's always good to interact with you and other crafters and to hear their story. So thank you very much. You've been a lovely guest.
Well, thank you for having me and thank you for asking.
Not a problem at all. So I will, without further ado, we've heard where you can find Jess, Dandelion and Peacock. Erasmus, as always, you can find at Erasmus Lowen, and myself you can find at tarants.co.uk, TARRANTS. And that's .co.uk is the website, it's the Instagram, and it's the Facebook page, almost as if I planned that out and checked before I started buying web lines. Thank you very much for everyone for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please do the usual things where you'll leave us a rating or a like or whatever. Tell your friends about us. That would be amazing. We do have a Patreon account. We have got merch coming at some point. That's all subject to us being organized, so it will be a little while. But yes, all of the usual things. Thank you very much, everyone. See you next time.
Bye.
Bye.